Licanias, the cultural festival of Neu-Neli, presents Neu-Neli, un incanto by Giuseppe Colicchia, read by Sean Patrick Lovett. To paraphrase what Marguerite Yourcenar said about the Emperor Hadrian, promoting culture is like building a public granary. And this phrase summarizes the spirit and philosophy that drives the young administrators and group of volunteers in Neu-Neli who, every year, work so hard and make great sacrifices to organize Licanias, a festival of rural culture open to the world that lasts the whole year round, but which has its main focus during the first weekend of October. Last year, we had the great honor and pleasure of welcoming Giuseppe Colicchia, who silently and gracefully examined our landscape, traditions, cooking and culture, and wrote this account that I've already read 20 times and will continue to read again and again, because every time you read it, it brings a new vision, makes new suggestions, new discoveries. For this reason, I would like to thank Giuseppe most sincerely for the profound and never rhetorical way in which he's been able to wonderfully capture the essence of Neu-Neli. I would like to thank Rino for his renowned hospitality and his devotion to accompanying visitors and showing them the riches of our town, and to all the people of Neu-Neli, the Neu-Nelesi, who every year contribute to the construction of our public granary by promoting our area through culture. Salvatore Cao. For Federico and Francesco. Neu-Neli. Neu-Nele. Neo. Neli. Neu. Nele. Neu-Neli. Neu-Nele. Neu-Neli in Italian. Neu-Nele in Sardo. Just the name. The name itself is more than a mere sound. You can sing it. It both contains and releases music. All you have to do is repeat it. Neu-Neli. Neu-Nele. In both languages, it's like a song. You can imagine it being sung by mermaids if Neu-Neli were on the sea. In fact, in a manner of speaking, there is the sea, but I'll come back to that. In any case, who knows whether coming into the world in a place with such a name is in any way related to the fact that Neu-Neli is the hometown of a famous tenor, not in the sense of an opera singer, but in the Sardinian sense. A polyphonic chorus, typical of the center of the island, in four parts, in which a single voice sings and the other three accompany the song with guttural sounds in harmony. In fact, this was actually something I knew about Neu-Neli even before going there, that it had a musical name, and that some of its inhabitants were part of a celebrated tenor. I knew no more than that. However, a close Sardinian friend of mine, whom I'd told about my visit to Neu-Neli, warned me, there's nothing there. Neu-Neli is far away from everything. Neu-Neli is in the middle of nowhere. There's not even a hotel. No restaurants. You do realize that. I don't want to put you off, but how long did you say you were going for?
4 days.
You may even go mad. There can't be more than 600 people there. So, if you get lonely, call me. Come down to Cagliari. But, here's the thing. I am not afraid of solitude. On the contrary, being able to isolate myself from the world is essential for my work. It's not a coincidence that I've lived for some 30 years in Turin and not in Rome. Turin is an ideal place to get away from things. Rome is not. It's highly unlikely that in Turin someone will invite you to their home for dinner, unless, of course, you went together first to nursery, then to primary school, followed by high school and on to university. In Rome, it's the exact opposite. It's a complete mystery to me that there are writers who, despite living in Rome, are able to write at all. Nevertheless, as I got onto the plane that would take me from Turin to Cagliari, I couldn't have imagined how far my Sardinian friend was from the reality. Because the truth is, yes, Neonelli is far away from everything. There is no hotel in Neonelli, not even a restaurant. One of the two bars doesn't even have a sign. The word bar has been outlined in spray paint on the side of the pavement. But despite all this, Neonelli is one of the most welcoming places I have ever encountered in what is now my somewhat long and unsettled existence. Don't you believe me, my dear Sardinian chum? And you, dear reader, don't you believe me either? Very well, let me tell you about it. When I arrived in Cagliari from Turin, outside the airport, a nice young man was waiting for me. He'd been sent by Neonelli to pick me up. Neonelli is far away from everything, he confirmed. Don't even think about getting there by public transport. And so we set off in his car. Among other things, as there are no restaurants in Neonelli, it's probably best if we stop off for lunch on the way, the nice young man added. Then I'll take you to Signor Bronzino's house, because there are no hotels in Neonelli. I wonder if you remember. I don't know whether you know, oh, who knows, a film like Easy Rider, for example, or a book like Blue Highways. Arriving in Neonelli is a bit like immersing yourself in surroundings that seem to come from those images and those pages, even though they were in America and this is Sardinia. Or, to be precise, the very heart of Sardinia. And it would be unfair to be rude about either. At a certain point, the road that leads to the heart of Sardinia, or better, to Neonelli, unravels, straightens out, and, beaten by the sun, long and dusty, cuts through the green and yellow and red and brown vegetation that saturates both sides as it heads off into the horizon. As the car takes me toward Neonelli, I keep telling myself that it doesn't feel like being on an island. The enormous sky above, the countryside is a piercing blue, and the vastness of the landscape brings to mind a continent. It's as if the roles were reversed. For the first time, Sardinia appears to me as the continent, the extent of which cannot be measured in terms of space, but of time. Not in millions of square meters, but millions of years. Because the one thing you cannot miss when you come face to face with this landscape is its history. The history of Sardinia, of this Sardinia that spreads out beyond the stereotypes of Sardinia, far from the yachts anchored against what looks like papier-mâché bays. And you don't even have to be on an archaeological site. It's enough just to observe the bark of the trees. Let's stop here at the Cantinedda di Ulla Tirso, the nice young man who's driving me to Neonelli says. That's the Tirso, he tells me, pointing to the river in the valley. Neonelli is on the other side. I look at the river, wide and split in two by the yellow arches of a dam, and beyond to the hills covered in typically Mediterranean vegetation. The car slows down and then comes to a stop. We get out. There's a great silence. The green of the olives, the orange-coloured stone path, the yellow walls of the Cantinedda. The place looks closed, but there is a small scrap of paper pinned to the door that says, "Open." We go inside, and no sooner have we crossed the threshold when the silence stops, overcome by a voice coming from a radio. I recognize it immediately, but it can't be. It is the unmistakable Benito Urgo, sexy fonni. Si accodomi, the voice of Benito Urgo tells us from the radio. Make yourselves comfortable, says the woman who runs the Cantinedda from behind the bar. Do you have fish? I ask. But it's a question that's entirely out of place, for as another of my friends born and raised in this place says, there is no sea in Sardinia. We finish our meal, a mix of lamb and pork, accompanied by the sound of the radio in the background, and continue on our way. The car crosses the river, imprisoned by the dam, and climbs the road leading to the village of Ulatirsu. The next town is Neoneli. We're almost there, my driver tells me. As well as Sa Cantinedda, there's also an agriturismo in Ula. Sa Tankitta, it's called. There are just two bars in Neoneli, and one of them doesn't even have a sign. However, it is indicated in spray paint on the pavement outside, as we saw earlier. But at that stage in my journey, I still didn't know that. And then, after just a few more kilometers, here we are, or better, here it is. Neoneli. 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 Let's be clear from the outset. You need to go to a place like Neoneli. It's not enough just to talk about it. And from here on in, that's what I'll try to do. But then again, how can simple words begin to express something like the silence of Neoneli? The silence of Neoneli. For we common mortals of an age saturated by ringtones and silly songs and news flashes and engines and car horns and white noise in which an omnipresent background hum is amplified by technology and pursues us on the street, in elevators, in the office, on the beach, in parks, and even at the dinner table, in the bathroom and the bedroom. It's been our destiny to live in a time in which silence seems to have become extinct. But in Neoneli, no. In Neoneli, you perceive a silence we're no longer used to, only in the moment in which, for some reason, it's broken. Perhaps by the bells around the necks of a herd of sheep, which here are called pitiolos, which are made from the shin bone of an animal attached to the skin with a pin made of dried heather. The bone doesn't ruin the metal of the bell, which has to be audible from miles away in case the animal gets lost, and can therefore last for centuries, or from their bleats. That then stop, returning the silence to those who can hear it. Only then do you become aware of it, and how precious it is. In fact, nowadays, if you want to travel in the quiet carriage on a train, you have to pay a premium, because silence has become a luxury. But in Neoneli, they live in luxury. The luxury of starlit nights, of a kind that can no longer be seen in cities, in which it seems you can sense the presence of the universe. At night, you can listen to absolute silence. Unless, of course, it's broken by nature, perhaps by the bark of a dog, given that the sheep are asleep, or by a breath of wind, strong enough to make the leaves dance on the trees. Otherwise, all is still. And even those who don't believe in a higher being can surprise themselves with the thought of a religious silence. Because in its absoluteness, the silence you hear in Neoneli is a mystical silence. You can't explain it. You just have to stop, breathe slowly, listen. Listening to Neoneli. In Neoneli, those who stop and breathe slowly, perhaps seated at a table on which the landlord has placed a couple of bottles of wine, along with some salami and cheese, can hear many different stories. Of course, you need to give it time, and therefore also allow yourself another luxury, because time is the most precious thing we have in this our only and unique existence, something we should never forget. But talking about time, the stories you can hear in Neoneli are stories with ancient roots, and they're made up not only of words, but also gestures and glances, smiles, facial expressions. Oral tales handed down from generation to generation, perhaps in front of a fire, just as in the past. A past that, thanks to such tales, becomes the present. It only takes a moment, and it seems like a small miracle. But it happens. In a flash, the flame in front of which these stories of Neoneli take shape is no longer the one that crackles in the hearth, but that of a hut or a shed. And so, along with the wine, the salami and cheese, a blanket materializes. A blanket in Neoneli. In Neoneli, The moment a blanket appears in front of a fireplace in a Neo-Nelly home, it evokes the man who carried it with him, in the silence of Neo-Nelly, under the starry sky of Neo-Nelly. It's a blanket of furesi, that is, of orbace, a poor, heavy, thickly woven fabric. But these are the characteristics that, for the man who carried it with him in silence and under the stars of Neo-Nelly, make that blanket more than just a blanket. A blanket that in Sardinian is called susacque pastore and is made waterproof not only by the thick weave, but also for the way in which it was combed. For the shepherd, it was also a refuge, a shelter from the cold and rain. The blanket was his home. The blanket was his family. The blanket was his salvation. He didn't just wrap himself up in it, but put it over his shoulders and crouched on the ground, made of it a hut, a cave, there, where there was no way of building a hut or finding a cave. Because once upon a time, the old shepherds would follow their flock night and day, regardless of the seasons or the weather. They had no idea what comfort or luxury was, but they knew well how to be dignified. The blanket of orbace protected them from the rain and kept in the warmth, even when in winter the shepherd found himself covered by a couple of inches of snow. The shepherds of Neo-Nelly could stay away for months and months in the pastures, and when the first winds announced the arrival of autumn, they would expose themselves to the open air to get used to the cold and prepare themselves for the winter ahead. Then, when the temperatures dropped well below zero, they focused on building a pinetta. A pinetta in the Neo-Nelly countryside. In the countryside of Neo-Nelly, a pinetta was a hut made of branches that shepherds used when, despite everything, the blanket of orbace turned out to be insufficient. Open at the top to let out the smoke from the embers they used to keep warm in winter. Smoke that coming out prevented the rain from coming in. But the pinetta could also prove useful in the summer when the temperatures were particularly high and the shepherds took refuge to escape the sun's fiery rays, without having to covet their grandmother's fans. A grandmother in Neo-Nelly. A grandmother from Neo-Nelly, who was also a beekeeper and cultivated flax and wove linen for her descendants. Linen that is now almost 100 years old, worn only on special occasions when the traditional costume is required. Of course, it's not the same linen you will find on the market today. Every time you touch it, you are amazed at how it's resisted over the years. That grandmother of Neo-Nelly, who was also a beekeeper and cultivated the linen that she wove for her descendants, also had a husband who was a shepherd by trade. Ancient respect for women meant that, despite appearances, in the family the mother's word counted for more than the father's. A bride's bottom drawer was supposed to be rich, but was not shown. She, the grandmother, would weave the linen for her descendants during her husband's long absences. So clearly, Penelope lived not only in Ithaca, but also in Neo-Nelly. This is what the stories of Neo-Nelly tell us. Stories of Neo-Nelly. The stories of Neo-Nelly are made of words and gestures and looks that bring the deeds of parents and grandparents to life. Now well past 80 years old, they dreamed of being boys again and going back to being shepherds. For a lifetime, they left the house at 4 in the morning, taking with them the food they would need for lunch and dinner, and the blanket of orbace so they could sleep out in the open. And with the food and the blanket, they also brought with them a book of poems, written in Sardinian, or the Divine Comedy, or even the Iliad and the Odyssey, and those poems written in Sardinian, and those verses written by Dante or Homer, read and reread, were learned by heart. And when they were children, they travelled miles to school, on foot during the summer, on the back of a donkey in winter. In those days, books were an indispensable part of the shepherd's life. and the shepherds, among friends, if by chance one of them had to leave Nonelli, perhaps on military service, would write to each other in verse. They would even organize competitions among themselves to see who could remember the most verses from the Divine Comedy, the Iliad or the Odyssey. The Odyssey in Nonelli. And in Nonelli there was a time when the Odyssey would materialize, a time when the ownership of a car was a privilege of the few, and there was a need to go to Cagliari. At that time, the only alternative was to go by bicycle, and once there, it might be that you would have to sleep in a chicken coop, closing your eyes and dreaming of the warmth of the fire in the hearth at home. A fireplace in Nonelli. A fireplace in Nonelli is part of everyone's story. Everybody in Nonelli was born in a house with a fireplace and grew up with the smell of burning wood that even now you can still get a whiff of here and there during the coldest months as you walk through the town. But the hearth was not only used for heating. And if you were lucky enough to be invited into someone's home in Nonelli, there's a good chance that you will witness an authentic sacrificial rite, the cooking of suckling pig over an open fire, with the aroma of the meat skewered over the spit mixed with that of the burning wood. It's a ceremony that allows the family to gather around the fire. The man who oversees the process first cooks only the belly of the pig to dry it. Then, when the animal's back is warm, the pig is turned slowly until it's the right color. If the hearth was already hot before the cooking started, this will take about an hour and a half. Today, also in Nonelli, the piglet is sold as soon as it's been skinned, opened, washed, and the entrails removed. However, many prefer to do this themselves, slaughtering the pig with their own hands. After the slaughter, the piglet is basted with its own blood, which gives it a reddish color. A porcello is a piglet of 20 or 30 days at most, weighing not more than 6 or 7 kilos. An even older way of cooking it consists in digging a hole, covering it with myrtle and aromatic herbs and pebbles, and then lighting a fire so that the animal was cooked in contact with the earth. Today this is done mainly for tourists. Skewered on the spit, the piglet is slowly turned over the fire, and for sure it's not a sight to warm the heart of everyone. The young animal hasn't had time to know the world. Its mother sow didn't get to see him grow. But Nonelli is not a place for vegans. The pig turns on the spit, and as it does so it turns a shade of gold. A bed of scented myrtle awaits him at the bottom of a torbia, a container made of cork. A little later, those who watched it turning over the fire will taste the results, soft on the inside and crunchy outside. Pity the poor piglet, who will never roam the Nonelli woodland. The woodland of Nonelli. The woodland around Nonelli is now a park, the Assai Park, an uncontaminated area of some 3,200 acres where all kinds of plants are dominated by large cork oak trees, which is perfect for the more than 130 wine producers in Nonelli. Dry stone walls follow the road you can take by car, being careful to avoid hitting any of the wild animals that live there: fallow deer, wild boar, stags, hawks, and even eagles. Transformed into a park, the woodland welcomes the traveller with numerous rest areas, but above all with its colours, all imaginable shades of green and brown, and with a small but delightful museum of stuffed animals, mostly hunting trophies donated by local hunters or their descendants. The cork is harvested every 10 years, an operation that leaves yellow scars on the trunks that will heal over time. Like the vineyards, the forest too undulates with curves, ups and downs, and if you're trekking, you may come across not only the fauna of the area, but also old charcoal burners, where wood charcoal was produced. It's a landscape that's found only here and in a few other areas of Sardinia, such as Ogliastra or Gallura. Legend has it that during the winter, transhumants and young shepherd fell in love with a girl from Cabras. The two swore eternal love, exchanging gifts, signalling their engagement. The following winter, the girl set off to reach her young man in Austis, a long and tiring journey. But when she arrived, she discovered that the young man had married another girl. The pain turned her to stone. And this is the explanation for Sa Krabarissa, an incredible 30-meter-high rock with the appearance of a woman standing tall among the cork oaks in the middle of the park. An enchanted and enchanting forest, where holly oaks, oaks, pear, peach, and cherry trees, figs, and prickly pears live alongside the cork oaks, and where stone troughs quench the thirst of the passing flocks of sheep that sometimes stop to rest on the sides of the road near the Dell'Angelo church that dates back to 1600. As for the cork, it's a very useful raw material for the winemakers of Neonelli. The winemakers of Neonelli. Neonelli has 130 winemakers and just 680 inhabitants, which means that more than one in two males is involved in winemaking. Neonelli has both red and white wines. The most important include Cannonau, Pascale, Monica, Muristello, and Carignano, Cagnulari, followed by Nuragus and Vermentino. Every producer makes wine for himself and his family. What's left over is then sold off in bulk. As is typical in Sardinia, the area uses the sapling system of cultivation. Some of the vines in Neonelli are 50, 70, even more than 80 years old. They are rocky vines, which once reached the edge of the town, and in some cases even inside. Then, in the 30s and 40s of the last century, they were moved to the hills, where the earth is sandy due to the crumbling of the rock. The plots are mostly medium-small, only the largest ones measure a few hectares. Some of the wineries in Neonelli are so small that they have just a couple of barrels. Each plant gives a few bunches of grapes. The vineyards are ploughed with oxen and tended by hand among expanses of cork oaks. Neonelli wine is a wine in its pure state, without additives, like that made by Samuel, who is a builder, but who cultivates his passion as a winemaker in his basement, guarded by cats lying under the walnut trees. It's people like him who produce wine from untreated vineyards for a single family and friends. A wine that's the fruit of a land rich in potential, and which, paradoxically, is wholly unaware of the fact, because it's precisely from Neonelli that one day the best Sardinian wine could emerge. At least, that's what I was told by a connoisseur as we walked among the abandoned houses of Neonelli. The abandoned houses of Neonelli. The abandoned houses of Neonelli wait patiently. Their stone walls echo with life from just 10, 100, maybe even 1,000 years ago. But then, what are 10, 100, 1,000 years compared with eternity? Nothing. The voices that rang out through the whitewashed walls were the voices of women, men, old folk, and children. Some of them are dead. Others have gone away. From time to time, some return, even if only to rediscover the colours and images of a time long gone, but still present in their memories. The abandoned houses of Neonelli are themselves memories. The memory of stone. Here, in a street in the town centre, the building that once served as the post office, it was here that the carriage that brought correspondence would stop. Letters from soldiers on the front, during both the First and Second World Wars, would have first arrived here before being delivered to the trembling hands of their recipients. And letters from the latter, addressed to the Veneto, Trentino, Albania, Greece, Russia. The man who drove the carriage wore a black uniform and carried a Roskopf watch in his waistcoat pocket, and he was a stickler for punctuality because he knew with what level of anxiety the relatives of the soldiers from Neonelli awaited the arrival of his carriage. After tying up the horses, he would step down from the footboard and greet the clerks of the Regie Poste. Another house, the home of one of the richest families of Neo-Nelli, takes up two whole blocks. Today, just as in the period when it was occupied, the big wooden front door, built into the stone, remains impassable. There is a tiny window to see who is knocking, and also a small hole through which a rifle could fire to defend against brigands or robbers. The story goes that there were sumptuous rooms and delightful gardens that no one could ever see, but that have entered the collective imagination of the people of Neo-Nelli. Rooms and gardens, to which, to this day, only the last descendants of the old owners have access. But alongside such mansions, there are also more modest houses, and alongside these, the homes of the poor. Today, the more recently built houses sometimes have three bathrooms for just one person, when there are those who remember when one bathroom was enough for seven. And most of the time, the bathroom in question wasn't even inside the house, but outside in the courtyard. And its use involved a branch, which served to preserve one's privacy, and a stick to scare away the hens. But among the abandoned houses of Neo-Nelli, there is a couple on the corner between Via Dottor Melis and Via Vittorio Emanuele, which, with their collapsed roofs and vegetation rising wild from the gaps that once were the windows that share the light of a street lamp in the evening. Who knows what their stones say in the nighttime? How much they must have seen? How many people? How many words spoken? How many significant events, starting with births and deaths, and then the departures, and sometimes returns? One is tempted to place one's ear against the walls and just listen. But the town's abandoned houses have respect for the stories they hold, and certainly don't tell them to the first stranger who passes through the streets of Neo-Nelli. The streets of Neo-Nelli. The streets of Neo-Nelli conserve the echo of ancient footsteps. To walk along them in the early morning or in the evening around dinner time, or in high summer in the hours immediately after lunch, you can appreciate their simple beauty in total solitude and enter another dimension in which time seems to have stopped. The great wooden doors, vases of flowers attached to ground floor windowsills, stone walls on which dark moss grows, indicating that they are north-facing. The cobbles that descend from the church to the nursery school, the library and the splendid little garden in Via San Pietro, and the plants that decorate the facades of the houses on Via dei Giudicati, and even the spontaneously growing vegetation that emerges from an abandoned house, like that beyond the white railings at the beginning of Via Dottor Melis, that leads to the small football pitch, and from there to the outline in which, all of a sudden, the hills catch your eyes like green waves, all contributing to ensure that the echo of ancient footsteps resounds within you. So like your own, and yet so different. Because all of the people who've walked these streets over the years each had their own special way of walking, their own rhythm, and carried with them their own story, their own thoughts, dreams, and concerns. On this generous Mother Earth, we're all just passing through. However long it lasts, our sojourn is brief. You see, here, in Neo-Nelli, particularly in the hours of the day and night in which, wandering its streets, you don't meet your own shadow, everything seems lighter in comparison with the immensity of time and space, an immensity that you can sense by merely raising your eyes to the sky from a courtyard in Neo-Nelli. A courtyard in Neo-Nelli. At the bottom of Via dei Giudicati in Neo-Nelli, there's a courtyard. Surrounded by a group of abandoned houses, the courtyard has corners in which spontaneous vegetation seems to be attempting to take control. The dream of this spontaneous vegetation in the courtyard at the bottom of Via dei Giudicati in Neo-Nelli is to take control, not only of the courtyard itself, but also the group of abandoned houses that surrounds it. But even that is not enough, because the dream of the spontaneous vegetation is to meet up with the green of the hills that surround Neo-Nelli, and for that to be possible, it needs to take control of the entire town of Neo-Nelly. Every single house, every single street, every stone, every square. We humans of Neo-Nelly, or guests of other humans in Neo-Nelly, take no notice of the spontaneous vegetation in the courtyard at the bottom of Via dei Giudicati, and even if we did, we would give no importance to the dream in question. But in this, we do an injustice to the spontaneous vegetation, which we continue to try to hold back with occasional pruning, but which one day will finally succeed in realizing its dream. In about 250 million years, the enormous tectonic plates of the Earth's crust that separated over the course of hundreds of millions of years in the past will come together again. And if at that time the planet is still inhabitable and continues to host our descendants, it's easy to imagine that the upheaval provoked by the reunification of the continents will be such that we will meet the same end as the dinosaurs. But for the time being, we're here. And among the things that make us appreciate the fact that we're here is the pasta of Neo-Nelly. The pasta of Neo-Nelly. The pasta of Neo-Nelly is homemade by the women of Neo-Nelly. Not all of them, naturally, but those that do make it once a year come together in a friendly competition entitled Sa Festa de Sa Fregola Istuvada e de Sa Cassola, an event that attracts the active participation of the whole town. Fregola is the name used for pasta across the whole of the south of Sardinia. And in Neo-Nelly, it's prepared the old way, first of all with the rolling of the flour on a wooden board to obtain small lumps similar to couscous, and then boiling them in a sort of soup. It's then drained before layers of pecorino cheese are added, and finally an abundant dose of boiling lard. When the women of Neo-Nelly prepare this dish, they're repeating the gestures of generations and generations of women who preceded them, and at least in the case of Fregola, the men just say, "Thank you," and eat. As for the smallest children, they go to the nursery school. Neo-Nelly Nursery School. The nursery school of Neo-Nelly hosts a handful of little boys and girls in a clean and well-lit environment. Although they don't realize it, how could they? They represent the future of Neo-Nelly. The future of Neo-Nelly are told stories. The future of Neo-Nelly are taught symbols that are letters that, when combined, form words that, in turn, can become other stories. The future of Neo-Nelly are taught other symbols that are numbers, which, when combined, can do real magic. Because in certain cases, they can make other numbers appear or disappear with tricks called addition and subtraction or division and multiplication. The future of Neo-Nelly are given crayons, with which the future of Neo-Nelly draw the world. The future of Neo-Nelly are looked to with hope and confidence, not now being able to say who of them will decide to leave Neo-Nelly and who will remain and who among those that leave will later decide to return. Meanwhile, the future of Neo-Nelly laugh, play, run, fall over and get back up, and all the while learn to become the future that will come. Do you by chance remember the Wim Wenders film, Wings of Desire? It was shot when Potsdamer Platz was still in the no-man's land between East and West, which made it much more interesting than the big shopping mall to which it's now been reduced. Wenders' film opens with this. When the child was a child, it walked with its arms swinging, wanted the brook to be a river, the river to be a torrent, and this puddle to be the sea. When the child was a child, it didn't know that it was a child. To it, everything had a soul, and all souls were one. When the child was a child, it had no opinion about anything, had no habits. It often sat cross-legged, took off running, had a cowlick in its hair, and made no faces when photographed. When the child was a child, it was the time for these questions. Why am I me, and why not you? Why am I here, and why not there? When did time begin, and where does space end? Is life under the sun not just a dream? Is what I see and hear and smell not just the reflection of a world before the world? Is there really such a thing as evil and people who really are the bad guys? How can it be that the I, who I am, didn't exist before I came to be? And that someday the I, who I am, will no longer be who I am? Lied vom Kindsein, Song of Childhood, Peter Hanke. Children's questions. The questions children ask are often about the future. Simple, direct, essential questions. Children are not afraid to ask certain questions. Sometimes adults are afraid to answer them. The future of Neo-Nelly are the little girls and boys that we can now find at the nursery school of Neo-Nelly. And as for the future, they are the community's most precious resource, a community that has made something available for the future, a small but precious library. The Neo-Nelly Library. The library of Neo-Nelly is kind because books, by their very nature, are kind. You can touch them, flick through them, read them, study them, abandon them, and then pick them up again, and sometimes even forget them. Kind, too, are the people who live in books, who live their workaday lives and offer advice to readers. The founding of libraries was like constructing more public granaries, amassing reserves against a spiritual winter, which, by certain signs, in spite of myself, I see ahead. These were the words given to the Emperor Hadrian by Marguerite Rousinard, and they continue. I've done much rebuilding. To reconstruct is to collaborate with time gone by, penetrating or modifying its spirit and carrying it toward a longer future. This beneath the stones, we find the secret of the springs. This is the impression that you get in Neo-Nelly, from Neo-Nelly, that under the stones lies the secret of the source, one that is always worth discovering, or better, to listen to, observe, understand. The fact is that once again, in these lines, the words time, past, future appear. And these bring to mind the words of T.S. Eliot, who in Burnt Norton, one of the four quartets, wrote, time present and time past are both perhaps present in time future, and time future contained in time past. If all time is eternally present, all time is unredeemable. What might have been is an abstraction, remaining a perpetual possibility only in a world of speculation. What might have been and what has been point to one end, which is always present. Footfalls echo in the memory, down the passage which we did not take, towards the door we never opened, into the rose garden. That's it. What might have been, and what was. The passage we did not take, the door we never opened. As Mark Twain reportedly put it, 20 years from now, you will be more disappointed by the things that you didn't do than by the ones you did. So throw off the bowlines, sail away from the safe harbor, catch the trade winds in your sails, explore, dream, discover. This is how it works. You go into a library and end up speaking about books, even in the summer, when everyone is dreaming of the sea. The Sea of Neo-Nelly. You can see the sea from Neo-Nelly, way off in the distance, only on days when the sky is crisp and the blue of one dissolves into the azure of the other. It's way over there, the marina of Oristano with its bay and the Capo San Marco lighthouse. But despite the distance, you can dive in Neo-Nelly. But where, you might ask? Among the waves of the surrounding hills that are sweet rather than salty and covered in vines. These waves are also a promise, and to see it realized, all you have to do is wait until the month of September. For with the harvest, that is when the sea really bathes Neo-Nelly, it is of course a wine-colored sea, to use the words of a writer born on another island that doesn't exist, dotted with strange white vessels that are, in fact, sheep. A Neo-Nelly sheep. A sheep in Neo-Nelly is a precious thing. For centuries, this animal has enabled generations to survive. Some of the old shepherds, who can X-ray their animals at a glance, tell how, at the end of the 19th century, their forebears, when obliged to slaughter a sheep or lamb in order to live, first asked the animal for forgiveness. They would also call the most expert hand among them to conduct the slaughter so as to minimize the suffering, and with the knife red with the animal's blood, they would make the sign of the cross on the ground and pray for all their livestock. Sometimes they would need to slaughter a number of head in order to avoid the whole flock from suffering from hunger. A pasture that is only big enough to sustain 100 sheep cannot satisfy the needs of 200. The fact is that it takes many hours to cook the meat from a sheep, and in Neonelli there's always the chance that you might come across a big pot boiling over an open fire around which a group of friends chat amiably while the meat cooks. The heavy aroma that comes from the pot is the aroma of the sheep, or rather, the lamb that never got to be a sheep, and that is now slowly moving towards the conclusion of its short fate, to feed the humans, who, until the day before, had led him to the pasture to graze with the rest of his family. The Sardinian breed of sheep is one of the oldest in continental Europe, and spread to other parts of Italy around the mid-1960s, when a number of Sardinian shepherds abandoned their homeland during the post-war economic boom, when Italy moved from a predominantly agricultural to a mainly industrial economy. This is why Sardinian sheep can now be found in Lazio or Tuscany, as well as in the regions of Umbria, Marche, Abruzzo, and Basilicata. In Sardinia alone, there are more than 3 million head, some 44% of all the sheep in Italy. Once a typical flock would number more than 200, and sometimes as many as 500. A lamb will be slaughtered at about 1 month, when it weighs around 7 kilos. The reaction of its family or playmates to the sudden disappearance is not recorded, but it's impossible that its absence is not noted, at least by its mother and siblings. Of course, it's unlikely that they will pray for their loss, at least not in a church. A church in Neonelli. There is one church in Neonelli, and it's dedicated to St. Peter. Built in 1611 on the site of a previous 14th century church, it was conceived in an austere but fascinating late Gothic style and has an exposed stone facade, a pink trachyte that changes colour with the light. Inside the church, where sheep are not allowed, there is a Romanesque high altar by the architect Andrea Ugolino di Carrara, dating back to 1858, and a wooden choir from 1880. The single nave is marked by the beauty of the floor and a marble balustrade. There's also a 15th century monstrance in gilded silver, but to see it, you need to gain the confidence of the parish priest, perhaps by inviting him to lunch. But even that might not be enough. Lunch in Neonelli. Having lunch in Neonelli, you understand why the lack of a restaurant is, in fact, a blessing. Because while there may not be any Michelin stars in Neonelli, there are people who will open their homes and welcome you to their table with the smell of homemade food. And at the table, where you sit down, you'll see a procession of dishes on a white tablecloth that includes lard, cold cuts, caponata, pasta handmade the same morning, free-range chicken, the goodness of which belies the cliché that in the interior of Sardinia you'll only ever be served pork or lamb. And so, between sideboards that hold the best crockery and terracotta vases, exposed stone and brick walls, and the sweet smell of a wood burning in the fireplace, these cooked dishes are without question another thing altogether compared with what you'd normally eat in a restaurant or hotel. So much so that in his heart, the guest inevitably ends up hoping that the day he returns to Neonelli, no one in the meantime will have opened such structures, because it's thanks to their absence that he's had the privilege of experiencing the hospitality of this corner of Paradise Lost, hidden in the heart of Sardinia, where the only ones to live as if they were in a hotel are the cats. The Cats of Neonelli. The Cats of Neonelli, like the stones of the houses of Neonelli, are the keepers of all of Neuneli's secrets. Silent, they watch over everything, and often, even when they seem to be asleep, they are actually keeping an eye on those who naively believe they are their masters. Neuneli's cats know it all. It's a wisdom that's been handed down and enriched from generation to generation, forever and ever. But there's little point in questioning them. At most, they will respond with a look that doesn't hide their pity for us. If and when they feel like it, the cats of Neuneli will let themselves be stroked, just like all cats in the world. But these cats know every single corner, every stone, every tree of Neuneli. But they keep their thoughts to themselves. And if it's true that they only see in black and white instead of color, their Neuneli is even more fascinating than the one we see. Of course, it's a shame, because they can't see the blue of the sky. The sky of Neuneli. The sky of Neuneli is a constant presence in the lives of its inhabitants, something that is not as obvious as it might seem. There are places inhabited by man where you have to go looking for the sky, not only if you live in the thick of the Amazon jungle, where if nothing else you can breathe. Just think of the urban claustrophobia of certain neighborhoods of some of our cities where you can hardly breathe at all. The sky above Neuneli is perhaps one of the first things of Neuneli that anyone who for one reason or another has to leave Neuneli misses, except, of course, the affections that continue to live under this sky. Crisscrossed, sometimes by eagles, though rarely by aeroplanes, the sky of Neuneli is part of the silence of Neuneli, at least when it doesn't produce the thunder that comes with the summer storms. The sky of Neuneli has always accompanied the imagination of shepherds in the moments when they lie down to rest in the grass, their hands intertwined behind their necks, their desires entrusted to heaven. Because, of course, the word desire comes to us from the Latin word desiderium, where the preposition de has a negative meaning, and the term sidus sideris in the plural sidera means star. So, therefore, according to some, to desire means to feel the lack of stars. It seems that the term originated from the language of the ancient Roman haruspices, or diviners, who, when the sky was overcast and they couldn't see the stars, were not able to perform their divination functions. And so, when the stars were not visible, the haruspices' deep desire for the stars made itself felt and lasted until they appeared once more. According to some authors, this etymological hypothesis is even more valid if we think about the verb to consider, which is constructed in a similar way to desire. Given that it too derives, in fact, from cum and sidera, and originally meant to divine or to prophesy, again starting from the interpretation of the stars. Moreover, the term desiderantes, from de sideribus, can also be found in the De Bello Gallico by Julius Caesar, in which it's used when ancient Rome's greatest leader mentions the soldiers, who, under the stars, await their comrades, who, after a day of fighting, have not still returned. But who knows what the shepherds of Neuneli have desired over the centuries, as they lay in the grass resting with their hands clasped behind their head. In any case, all of their desires are still there, in the sky of Neuneli, where sometimes a crescent or waning moon, more than a sickle, seems like a billhook. The billhook of Neuneli. The billhook of Neuneli hangs on the wall down in the garage, its metal blade in the form of a question mark. Is sharpened on the concave side. It has a wooden handle and is used to cut small to medium-sized branches. The billhook is used to prune olive trees or cut down cane, and it can also be used to whittle the sticks for the vegetable garden to grow the seedlings that produce tomatoes. But the billhook of Neuneli can also have another use, which nobody ever wants to experience. Hanging on the wall down in the garage, it's also used as a weapon of defense in the event of an unwanted meeting with an attacker, even if, to be honest, in some houses, it's not the only thing you have to rely on in such circumstances. There's also, for example, the shotgun, which you may also see hanging on the same wall of the garage. Shotguns in Neu-Neli. Hunting shotguns can be found in many homes in Neu-Neli. In fact, Neu-Neli is not only a town of shepherds and wine growers, but also of hunters. It was the hunters of Neu-Neli hunters that donated to the Neu-Neli Park the beautiful stuffed animals in the small but delightful museum built in the shade of cork oaks. But also for the shotgun, which, like the billhook, can be hung in the garage or hidden in a cubbyhole or under or above a cupboard, there are possible uses that go beyond the purpose for which it was made. In any case, every time I see a shotgun, I see my father busy cleaning his 5-shot automatic Remington and filling the red or green plastic cartridges with lead pellets, which he would then seal and insert into his belt. He used a scale to measure the exact amount of pellets, and I would watch his slow and precise gestures, fascinated, which was what he wanted. Who knows how many men in Neu-Neli have made those same gestures, then gone hunting in the early morning and returned proudly home with their bags swollen with game. And who knows how many women have found themselves, like my mother, having to pluck and clean and wash and cook and put the game on the table, taking care not to leave in the meat of the day. Quail or pheasant or hare or wild boar, even a single one of those lead pellets inserted into the cartridges by her husband that become dear, even them, when they become part of one's memories. The memories of those who leave Neu-Neli. The memories of those who leave Neu-Neli, having been born and brought up in Neu-Neli, ensure that Neu-Neli doesn't exist only in Neu-Neli, but reaches out across unimaginable distances that could only be precisely quantified if we knew exactly where all those who, for one reason or another, have left Neu-Neli and who now live in Rome or Milan, Berlin or New York were. What is true is that Neu-Neli lives and is in their minds, there where all memories lie. Think about it. How often do we surprise ourselves by asking what our first memory is? We remember nothing of our entry into this world, not even our first breath, or the first time we opened our eyes, or felt the warmth of our mother's hands on our skin, or her smell, her voice. None of this remains. And yet they are unique, unrepeatable moments, but forgotten. They're not among our oldest memories. My oldest memory, or what I think is the first thing that I remember, is from some years later. I was 3, perhaps 4 years old. I was coming down a spiral staircase. The kitchen was empty. Sunlight was shining through the curtain drawn across the open door that led onto the courtyard. And my mother, there outside. If the door was open and there was all that sunshine, it must have been the summer of 1968 or maybe 1969. This is my first memory. Yours may be from 1988 or 89, even 98 or 99. No matter. What matters is something else. It's the voices of our parents. Their eyes, their hands, their breath, their smell. It's to them that we owe our life, our coming into the world. And to have come into the world in Neu-Neli is to carry with you innumerable fragments of Neu-Neli, made up of the smells and colours of Neu-Neli, of the stones and trees of Neu-Neli, the food and wine of Neu-Neli, the sky and the stars of Neu-Neli, the cats and other animals of Neu-Neli. Neu-Neli, Neu-Neli, Neu, Neli, Neu, Neli, Neu-Neli, Neu. Neu-Neli in Italian. Neu-Neli in Sardo. Tucked in among the hills, among the waves of vineyards. What a pity it is to have to leave Neu-Neli, the heart in the heart of Sardinia, which pulsates, first strongly and then imperceptibly, thanks to the absolute silence of the nights, when the sky is a black range where the stars bloom. For whatever reason you leave, she will accompany you wherever you go, and you will always want to return. Postscriptum 1. A personal note. I'm not exactly sure why, but for some reason, my short stay in Neu-Nehli made me reflect on a series of more or less fundamental things. You'll have understood this from listening to these pages. Memory, home, our affections, our desires, nostalgia, the past, the present, the future. Do you remember Un'ora sola ti vorrei? Originally, it was a song sung in the 1930s by Fedora Mingarelli and then later by Ornella Vanoni, and not only her. I found myself singing Un'ora sola ti vorrei one afternoon last summer. I was thinking about my father and a couple of other people, and the fact that at this particular moment in my life, the thing I want most is not to win the Premio Strega, but to be a child again, even for just an hour, and for that hour to be in the company of those who are no longer here, to tell them of all the things that I never said when I had the chance. I think this is something that happens to everyone. I was singing, sitting in front of my computer, and almost without thinking, I typed the words houses and for sale into Google, and then I added the name of the tiny country village where I lived as a child. After a second, ping! Impossible, I said to myself. That's it, the very same. There, on my screen. My childhood home. Indicated under the heading, Country Homes for Sale. Just like any other house. And going for a few tens of thousands of euros. I stopped singing. I couldn't believe it. Of course, it had changed in 30 or 40 years, at least judging from the facade. Whoever had placed the announcement hadn't bothered to include pictures of the inside, but it hadn't changed enough to be not recognizable. I looked at it for a long time, the way you do with old loves. Despite some signs of wear and tear, to my eyes, it was still beautiful, but above all, it was dear to me. I immediately thought, I want it. I want the house where I learned all the most fundamental things. I want the house where my mother sang me to sleep with the old songs. I want the house where my father prepared wonderful food for me. I want the house where my big sister taught me to read. I want the house where I stole from her the book that changed my life, The Sun Also Rises. I want the house I came home to from school. I want the house where I would stare for hours at the ceiling, dreaming of being somewhere else. I want the house where on certain summer evenings the whole family would gather, filling the kitchen with smells and smoke. I want the house where on certain autumn evenings, mornings, we would wake up at dawn and head for the woods to train our dogs to hunt. I want the house from where I left to go on holidays and was happy to leave. I want the house to which I would return happily, in the end, from my holidays. I want the house with the cats in the courtyard. I want the house with the cast iron spiral staircase. I want the house where I would hide behind the fridge when I'd been naughty and knew I was in for it. I want the house with the red leather sofa, in which my favorite cousin would sleep when he came to visit us from Milan. The house where I grew up. But then I suddenly realized that what I wanted was not that house, the one that had appeared on my computer screen under the heading Country Homes for Sale. What I wanted was that house, but 30 or 40 years ago. So I closed my computer and started singing Un'ora sola ti vorrei again, because this is what I want today, to be able to spend another hour with my father, who passed away exactly 20 years ago, and to tell him what I didn't tell him when the time we had available had not yet run out. It's also for this that every year I want to go back to Marsala, the place where my father was born and where the ticking of the clock that would measure his time on earth began. Marsala, yellow and hot and loaded with memories. In our own time, when adolescence seems to have extended indefinitely thanks to consumption trends and taboos, you realize you become an adult when you realize how many people you've known, and in some cases loved, are no longer here.
Your eyes look at the same things their eyes looked at, but it's of little consolation. Everything about Marsala reminds me of my father. The light in Marsala reminds me of my father. The smell of Marsala reminds me of my father. The colors of Marsala remind me of my father. The yellow limestone from which the houses of Marsala are built is the same yellow that I saw when my father was by my side. The clear blue sky of Marsala is the same clear blue I saw above me when my father still held my hand. And likewise the blue of the sea, the pink of the bougainvillea, the green of the palms. Even the air that I breathe and the wind that ruffles my hair in Marsala reminds me of my father and the time I spent with him. Too little, gone forever. Un'ora sola ti vorrei. I wonder how many of those who hold Neu-Nehli in their hearts, as I hold Marsala in mine, sometimes rake around the images archived in the immateriality of the internet, looking for their old home, or that of their grandparents, there where they were once happy as children. And who knows how many put Neu-Nehli into Google Maps, and then wander through the streets of the town where they were born and grew up, and where, in their hearts, they long to return. Neo, Nehli, Neu, Nehli, Neu-Nehli, Neu-Nehli. Neu-Nehli in Italian, Neu-Nehli in Sardo. Just the name. The name itself is more than a mere sound. You can sing it. It both contains and releases music. All you have to do is repeat it. Postscriptum 2. The Inhabited Houses of Neu-Nehli. The Inhabited Houses of Neu-Nehli, as soon as you leave the heart of the historic center, are sometimes surrounded by extensive greenery. Olive trees, palms, weeping willows, pine, fir, oleander, persimmon, mandarin, lemon. These are just some of the trees you will find as you walk through the town. I was lucky enough to be put up by Bronzetto in one of the inhabited houses of Neu-Nehli, and it's him I have to thank for much of what I learned about Neu-Nehli. It was he who day by day dismantled all of the stereotypes of the closed Sardinian, uninterested in contact with outsiders. The welcome I received in his home was so much more than I could have imagined, and so I'd like to thank him. But I'd also like to thank Samuel, the bricklaying winemaker, another example of extraordinary hospitality, who helped me to appreciate the wines of Neu-Nehli. And with them, of course, Salvatore, who by inviting me to Neu-Nehli allowed me to discover not just a town, but a whole world. Thanks to all of you, and to the volunteers of the Licanias Festival, for days that will remain forever in my heart. And please, keep things as they are. No hotels or restaurants in Neu-Nehli. At most, a bar, with the sign spray-painted onto the pavement.
You've been listening to Neu-Nehli, un incanto, by Giuseppe Colicchia, read by Sean Patrick Lovett. A full-color sound production for Licanias, the Festival of Neu-Nehli.